Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with President Obama's emotional plea today to the nation not to forget the recent massacre of children in Newtown and to turn the heartbreak into something real that will reduce gun violence. Saul Cornell, the author of A Well-Regulated Militia, The Founding Fathers and the Origins of Gun Control in America, joins us to discuss whether the Senate can be shamed into action on a watered-down gun control measure before it. Then we'll look into how the Saudis are offering young anti-government protesters who have been arrested a ticket out of jail if they go to Syria to fight in a jihad against the Assad regime. Freelance journalist Rhys Ehrlich, who has written an article at Global Post, Saudi Youth Fighting Against Assad Regime in Syria, joins us to explain the duplicity of the Saudi government in outsourcing the arming of Syrian rebels to wealthy Saudis who procure arms for the most radical fighters like the Al-Nusra Front. Then finally, we will examine the reversal of democracy in Thailand, Venezuela, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Russia with Joshua Kolancic, the author of a new book, Democracy in Retreat, The Revolt of the Middle Class and the Worldwide Decline of Representative Government. He is a fellow for Southeast Asia at the Council on Foreign Relations and is a former columnist for Time and a correspondent for The New Republic, The American Prospect, and Mother Jones. And joining us now is Saul Cornell, who's the author of A Well-Regulated Militia, The Founding Fathers and the Origins of Gun Control in America, Whose Right to Bear Arms Did the Second Amendment Protect?, and the forthcoming book, The Second Amendment Goes to Court. He is the Paul and Diane Gunther Chair in American History at Fordham University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Saul Cornell.
Well, thank you for having me again.
And the president today made a very impassioned speech at the White House in front of the mothers of gun victims, and he reminded the nation that less than 100 days ago there was this horrible massacre in Newtown that the entire country pledged something would be done, and this time it would be different. And then he went president basically saying with indignation, shame on us if we've forgotten. I haven't forgotten those kids. Shame on us if we've forgotten. So is the country, does it have this kind of moral amnesia that the president's talking about?
Well, I would say that there are a couple things I would say, actually. First, it's a very diverse country. I think there are parts of the country where progress is being made and where the debate has changed so that we're now talking about this issue in a more deliberate, rational, and serious way. There are parts of the country where the sort of gun rights culture has shifted even further to a kind of radical extremist position. And I think it just goes to show how deeply divided America is over this issue. Although it's interesting when you start to look at how this issue plays out in terms of American culture. You know, one of the obvious things that you see is that in places where the Confederacy was, you know, where you had Southern slavery, you see a very strong gun rights culture. You see very lax gun laws. You see very high levels of gun violence, and you see a lot of militant reaction to the idea of common sense gun regulation. And, you know, parts of what we used to call the Wild West, you sort of see a similar kind of gun culture, although the reality in those places was that they actually had some quite strict gun control in places like Dodge City that, you know, the myth of the West has somewhat clouded over. But even in places like Arizona and Colorado, you have seen some movement on this issue. So I think it still remains to be seen whether or not we'll get universal background checks. It's hard to imagine how anyone could oppose it, but you know what goes on in the mind of Senator Paul and Senator Cruz, you know, is anyone's guess. They don't seem to live in the same rational universe that the rest of us live in. But clearly, other places, Colorado, New York, Connecticut, will act soon. We are going to see some improvement in the kind of regulatory scheme. So I think it just shows you what a complicated country America is.
Well, obviously the president is deeply frustrated, and he was quite passionate, saying that we've cried enough, we've known enough heartbreak, what we're proposing is not radical. I'm not taking away anyone's gun rights. It's something that if we are serious, we will do. Now's the time to turn that heartbreak into something real. Now, obviously already Harry Reid has rolled over and taken out the assault weapons ban in the Senate bill. So to that extent, the president's already suffered a loss. I don't know how much he thought it had a prayer, but still, what's your sense of what Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, is doing in terms of basically putting these ads in states and in TV markets where these wavering senators and congressmen are?
Well, of course, it remains to be seen. So far, he's had a pretty good track record, and of course, he is very smart, and he is very politically savvy, and he has considerable resources. What's interesting is we have the sort of perverse incentives of American politics, where if we just put it up to some kind of plebiscite and voted, we would get background checks tomorrow. But because of the structure of interest politics, both in terms of money and the fact that the most radical voices dominate the debate and show up at legislative hearings and bombard people with emails and letters and phone calls, we've got perverse incentives that seem to pull us away from reason towards the most irrational positions in a debate. And so the interesting question is whether Bloomberg can use his considerable resources to counteract that perverse incentive in the system and get the millions of soccer moms and responsible gun owners and other people who recognize, look, nobody is made safer if you don't go through a background check. I mean, you know, the fact that it just boggles the imagination how any of these senators could even propose filibustering background checks. I mean, you know, just listening to Senator Cruz during the Senate hearings, I mean, he is clearly a very arrogant and somewhat pompous and really not very well informed commentator on the Second Amendment. I mean, you know, pretty much everything that comes out of his mouth is out of the Federalist Society playbook. He clearly hasn't, you know, done any serious digging into the issue in terms of what the history and what the law related to the Second Amendment is. But, you know, he spouts this pre-digested pablum that we've gotten from, Cato Institute and Federal Society and these other agents of sort of radicalizing and weaponizing the Second Amendment for this radical agenda. So, I just don't understand how he can, you know, face his family, you know, or look in the mirror in the morning and argue against background checks. I mean, it really is insane.
Well, I don't understand why the proponents of gun control, and perhaps Mayor Bloomberg will do this with his deep pockets, start an offensive that points out that the NRA in its current form, because after all, it wasn't long ago that it was in favor of background checks, is in fact, you know, not protecting the legitimate rights of the legal rights of ordinary law-abiding Americans to own guns, which is the mantra that they put out. What they're doing effectively is protecting criminals. They're protecting gun owners who can sell any numbers of assault weapons to Mexican crime organizations and ship them into Mexico or ship them into inner cities. We know that only a small number of gun stores are responsible for shipping arms and selling arms that end up in the inner cities. We know that the Tired Amendment that the NRA put through one of their stooges in the House effectively prevents law enforcement from sharing data on crime guns. These are guns that already kill people. The DNA behind that gun isn't important to know, but no, you can't even share. Law enforcement can't even share it. It's insane. And haven't they slipped something into the latest funding bill?
Yes, it's quite remarkable that that they've managed once again to sort of sneak something in that essentially will handicap ATF's ability to require gun stores to do inventories, which again is kind of an absurd thing. You expect a store? How could any? I mean, it's the first thing you learn in undergraduate business courses. You need to do an inventory to know what's moving and what's not moving, and to make sure that things haven't been stolen or or lost. And yet, you know, if you want to sell things under the table, obviously doing inventories is not a very good idea, which is clearly what's behind this. I mean, basically, the NRA is both a membership organization that stokes kind of the worst kind of paranoid fantasies and fears of the gun rights community, but it's also, you know, an effective agent of the gun industry, and its goal is to sell as many guns as possible with as few strings attached. And, you know, it's just astonishing that we live in a country where something that even NRA members favor somehow can't get passed, which is to say universal background checks.
Again, I'm speaking with Saul Cornell, who's the author of A Well-Regulated Militia, The Founding Fathers and the Origins of Gun Control in America, Whose Right to Bear Arms Did the Second Amendment Protect?, and the forthcoming book, The Second Amendment Goes to Court. He is the Paul and Diane Gunter Chair in American History at Fordham University. Now, what about the idea of going on the offensive and not sort of rolling over like Harry Reid's done on the assault weapons ban by taking it out? Obviously, he's upset Senator Feinstein, who, by the way, was the person that Ted Cruz was lecturing in a condescending way, and she managed to, I think, ream him fairly successfully. But I don't know whether the facts matter with these people. But I think with a lot of people in the United States, if they really got the true facts about what the NRA is really, who they're really protecting, you know, not law-abiding citizens, but criminals. That's, I think, an unassailable fact, isn't it?
Well, I think there's no question that the weakening and preventing these common sense regulations can only benefit criminals and the gun industry and not the typical law-abiding citizen. And it is astonishing that the NRA can do things like, after Newtown, still manage to get back to its old tricks of sneaking, you know, unrelated gun rights bills into bills that have nothing to do with firearms. I mean, but of course, part of the problem is a deeper structural problem, is which we there are a lot of people who think that maybe our constitutional system needs some procedural overhauls, because the idea that you can sneak things into these huge bills, which happens on a variety of not just guns but other kinds of issues. I mean, you know, I think that would have shocked the Founding Fathers, because if you look at the average bill that was passed in the 18th century, there was nothing like these 1,000-page bills that we see today. You know, most statutes were fairly short, and, you know, maybe we ought to have an amendment that says no statute can be longer than a page, and if you have to do something complicated, you better pass a whole bunch of statutes.
Well, it's still, I think, hard to understand why the majority gets thwarted in many ways in the country. And that's obviously the use of the filibuster is entrenched. And here you have a president who won handily, and yet he's not able to govern. I mean, he's got to beg and plead and push the emotional buttons that he did today. I find it extraordinary.
Well, it is extraordinary. And part of the reason is I don't think that people on the gun regulation side, gun violence prevention side, have been willing to exact a political price for these measures. You know, there's a lot of agricultural subsidy bills in some of these pro-gun states that could get held up, could be held hostage in exchange for some moderation on the gun issue. And I think, you know, maybe we'll see some movement in that direction, because until the voice of reason are willing to play hardball, we're not going to – obviously, reason is not going to convince these people. So the only thing that will convince them is, I suppose, to use an appropriate metaphor, hold a gun to their head.
Well, but the thing that I find particularly obscene about what happens when you have these extraordinary massacres like Newtown, that it was so hideous because it involved young children – and you keep wondering, is there some kind of, you know, compassion fatigue in this country? Is there some kind of moral numbness that's happened? Because the people who were so deeply outraged haven't been able to translate their outrage into political action. But meanwhile, the NRA has made money out of Newtown. They have got more members, and they're making more money. They thrive on these massacres.
Because of course, many firearms manufacturers also donate money to the NRA when they sell a firearm,
Right, but the firearms people also get rewarded every time there's a massacre,
right,
because people rush out to buy more guns and the NRA pumps up the paranoia that Obama's going to take your guns away, and they trip over each other to buy guns, and in fact they ran out of ammunition recently. So that's the asymmetry that I can't get my head around.
Well, I must confess, here in Connecticut, it is quite remarkable. So looking at some of the kind of public hearings, it's very clear that gun rights people, for reasons that I still find amazing, never seem to have jobs that prevent them from showing up in the middle of the day to testify. We know that the gun manufacturers literally let their employees off and hired buses to bus them to the Capitol to testify. The peace lobby and the peace industry doesn't seem to have nearly the same resources. But the polling data consistently shows that we're talking about a very small minority. And I'm going to an open town meeting tonight in my own town, which is quite near Newtown, Connecticut. And it'll be curious to see what the representatives who have before Newtown clearly aligned themselves with a sort of pro-gun rights position, whether they will have changed at all. After listening to countless, polls and going to public meetings where people have spoken passionately about this issue, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens tonight. It'll be a real eye opener for me to see whether or not, even here in Connecticut, one town over from Newtown, we can have shifted the debate in the direction of reason, moderation, and sensible gun regulation.
Well, just in closing, Saul Cornell, is there a possibility that we can introduce into this debate that doesn't seem to be going anywhere the obvious fact that so many of these misfits, these tortured kids that perpetrate these massacres, are influenced by the cultural influences from Hollywood, et cetera, that basically tell you that, you know, if you got a big gun, you're a big man and you can solve your problems. And even in testimony after Newtown, the right wingers put up some crazy woman who argued that women needed assault rifles in the home because when a burglar or an intruder came in, they would be scared off by these big Arnold Schwarzenegger-like weapons. I mean, the whole
debate.
But of course,
the great thing about that is Senator from Ryland pointed out that the story she told involved not an assault weapon, but an old-fashioned shotgun,
right,
which, of course, nobody's talking about taking away. And she actually hadn't even bothered to figure out what gun was used in the story she was telling before Congress,
right,
which is just astonishing in terms of, what a buffoon, go before Congress, tell this great tale, and then not even bother to check the most basic facts. But typical of what happens, I think, in this very ideologically charged, I've listened to a lot of these public hearings and debates, and I would say, more often than not, what you hear is mythology and paranoia. You don't really hear reasonable analysis, well-researched studies. What you hear is stuff downloaded from the internet that nobody's bothered to check. And, that's not a very good way to make public policy. I mean,
But what I was going to get at, though, Saul, was the idea that maybe we should teach our young boys and young men that guns are instruments of cowardice, that this is not something that makes you a man. It makes you a coward. I've mentioned before that I grew up in Australia, where if you introduce a gun or a knife into a fight, because it's a country of manly men, as you probably know, you're considered an abject coward. So I'm just thinking that maybe we should try and change the culture away from, and particularly here in Hollywood, away from celebrating guns as instruments of heroism and making them instruments of shame.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I don't know how many tickets you'll sell, unfortunately, which is, the bottom line in Hollywood. But, just even much less ambitious things, like pointing out that, in many, many instances, bringing a gun into your home puts you at greater risk, not less risk, of gun violence. And obviously there are many people who have guns in their homes and they can store them safely, and the guns are unlikely to be used for ill purpose. But if you look at some of the statistics, some of the research that's been done at Harvard School of Public Health, You know, the rates of mental illness and the rates of attempted suicide between high-gun states and low-gun states are actually very similar. What's astonishingly different, you know, orders of magnitude four or five times as high, is the rate of successful suicides in high-gun states. So, you know, little things like saying, you know, you have your Second Amendment rights, but if there's somebody in your house who's seriously depressed, get the guns out at least until they've stabilized, because you're putting them at risk. Having the gun in that house is really going to make you much less safe than safe. And, you know, if we could maybe start with a few clear, obvious cases like that, we can begin to make some progress.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Saul Cornell.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk.
Again, I've been speaking with Saul Cornell, who's the author of A Well-Regulated Militia, The Founding Fathers and the Origins of Gun Control in America, Whose Right to Bear Arms Did the Second Amendment Protect?, and the forthcoming book, The Second Amendment Goes to Court. He is the Paul and Diane Gunter Chair in American History at Fordham University. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the Saudis are recruiting young jihadis to fight in Syria. Is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my finger on your trigger, I know nobody can do